Chuck Chat Freestyle for Sunday, August 11, 2013. Dog days of podcasting, whatever day it is. I don't remember, and I keep hearing conflicting reports because I don't think anybody officially knows when this started, if it was July 29th, 30th, 31st, August 1st, whatever. I'm just going to keep going with my journey on the Silicon Road. I mentioned that yesterday we had the Apple IIe, my first experience typing in that, and many days staying after school. And I also mentioned that I have an Apple IIe currently. We hooked that up recently to our 65-inch plasma, and oh, those bleeding colors look so beautiful in super large font. You could drive a truck through the low-resolution lines of text. It's really funny to see a 40-character-wide display on a 65-inch TV. It was, the letters were huge. You could probably read them from across the highway. Yeah, I also thought of something this morning that I neglected to mention yesterday, that computer programming actually helped out with some of the things, the concepts in math, like functions, where you have f of x equals, you know, 2y plus 3z, and they were talking about these function things, and I couldn't quite get it in math, but when I started getting into more sophisticated programming, I went, oh, a function, that's kind of like a subroutine or a procedure, or I don't remember what we called them at the time because I hadn't been introduced to Pascal, or maybe I had. Have to look back. And, you know, that you could send in this parameter and it would do this set of instructions and come back. That was a cool concept that I could easily grasp for some reason in computers, but couldn't in math for some reason. It was just a little trickier. And, you know, it kind of makes sense that, you know, when I got to college, I couldn't really understand why the computer department was always under the math department. And there is such a close tie that I didn't recognize at the time that now seems completely and utterly obvious. You know, I always thought it should be a little closer to the electronics, but you know, science is science, and math is part of the science, and you know, it all makes sense once you step back and go, oh, yeah, okay. Or maybe after 30 years of experience in this stuff, it makes more sense. So we get to the second half of my junior year in high school, where Mr. Balding, who also taught the beginner computer course the previous semester on the Apples, he had an advanced computer course called Fortran. Ooh, yeah, we did Fortran 77, but the high school did not have any Fortran capabilities. So we had to go down to the university to use their mainframe and their Fortran 77 compiler and their key punches. This is where the key punches come in, folks. If you have ever met me in person, you know that I still have a few of these babies in my computer bag. And if you've watched the podcast, occasionally you see these things pop up on the screen as some kind of crazy sign card notation. These are my programs that I wrote in the winter and spring of 1982. Yeah, still got them. Interesting course. Lots of new techniques. Some things were sort of like BASIC, where you had arrays and dimensioned them and declared them. And interesting point of fact, if any of you are programmers and you've written for loops before, you'll often notice that there's a common variable people use when they write their for loops. For I equals 0 to 10, or while I, they usually use I as the variable, not T, not S, not F. It's usually always I. And then if they need another one, it's J. My understanding, don't quote me on this. Someone may want to look it up on Wikipedia or something. My understanding is this came from Fortran, one of the earliest third-gen languages, I believe it's called. Very scientific in math, is what I'm told. It was very popular among scientists because of its fast processing speed. And their variables, the variable types were dependent on where they were declared in the alphabet. I believe you could use long variable names like 8 or 10 characters, but only the first two were really recognized. And oftentimes programmers got lazy and they just used one. So I was the start of the integer variables. I don't remember where the string variables or character variables or real floating point variables were. Sorry, that's been lost to history, and I'll call it a senior moment at this point. But I was the first integer variable and often used for that purpose because it was a common looping construct. So anyway, to get a C in this course, you had to choose from either 4 or 6, I can't remember how many it was, easy programs. These were about 10 to 20 lines of code. And if you've programmed on punch cards, those would be 10 to 20 cards of code. Of course, you always had to stick your job card on top. This was the one that told the compiler whose program it was, where it started, where it stopped, that sort of thing. And most user hostile editor is those key punches, because if you make one character mistake, you need to punch your card again. And if you drop your deck of cards, you've basically scrambled your program, your lines of code, and hope you have a printout to put them back in the right order. Or you just say, to heck with it. So I remember these easy programs for the C were pretty easy. We had a snow day, actually two consecutive snow days for the high school that the college did not have. And I went to the university and banged out, I think, all of my C-level programs and even some of the Bs. To get a B, you need to choose from 2 or 3 of 6 medium-level programs, which were about 50 lines of code. And I got a lot of productivity those couple of days. I don't know if this was out of procrastination, looking for an opportunity, or just taking advantage of some bad weather. And on the way home, my buddy almost put the car in the snowbank. Actually, he did put the car in the snowbank because we had to pull it out. Of course, one of those stories you never really tell your parents other than, hey, I got a lot of homework done. Then to get an A, you had to choose from 1 or 2 hard programs, which were, around 50 to 100 lines of code. The one that I chose was the Game of Life, also known as Conway's Game of Life. If you want to know more, you can look it up on Wikipedia. There's a wonderful, wonderful page on that with some real examples. But the basic rules were it's a grid, 2x2 array. It was a basic array exercise where you had one array and a second array, and you set something up in one and had to copy it to the next. So a whole bunch of looping, a whole bunch of keeping track of things, and some calculations. So you set up, this is what's called a zero-player game. You set up the initial state, and then the rules of the game take over and determine this colony exercise, as it were. So each cell has either a life or death scenario. And if a cell has fewer than 2 live neighbors, and it's alive, so you've got a live cell, and you count around it, so you got to go, upper right, upper left, direct above, direct across, down, the neighboring cells in this array, which was tricky when you get to the edges, but never mind that for the moment. If it has 2 or fewer, that cell would die from underpopulation. If it has fewer than 2, it would die. If it has 2 or 3, it goes on to live to the next generation. And if it has more than 3 live neighbors, it dies of overcrowding. And if there's a dead cell with exactly 3 live neighbors, it becomes a live cell. So things can turn on and things can turn off. And you see that it morphs from one generation to another. So I set up all kinds of test patterns. I had more fun mapping these things out and punching them on the punch cards, one line at a time. I made American flags. I made my name. I made my buddy's name. I made stars. And I probably had about 8 or 10 different sets of cards that I would slap onto this program, because you had a code segment, a chunk of cards that was your program. And I believe it ended with an end statement. But that could be basic. I don't remember. And then you had a data segment where your data card started. So as you fed these into the card reader, it would go chunk, 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 go code, 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 go. Oh, that's the end of the code. Data, 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 data. Oh, that's the end of the data. All right. So had all of these things, and we'd feed them in, and we'd wait. And of course, it was the university's mainframe at the beginning of the semester. Most kids' programs were small and not that complex, easy to debug, easy to run. They weren't dealing with recursion or anything yet. So we had this thing called turnaround time, because they would submit programs in batches. And the batches of programs would run. And when they were done, you'd get your output on the line printer. This wasn't a dot matrix. This was a thing that printed a line of text at a time. Really, really fast compared to dot matrix printers, and especially fast compared to the old daisy wheel printers. So turnaround time was maybe 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes. You could sit there and, you know, talk with your buddies, and then your printout would come out. Later on in the semester, as program got more complex and the higher CS courses, you know, the 300, 400 level courses, and especially the grad students would get going, or for whatever reason, if the DNR came in and wanted to process their fish data for the last 12 months, turnaround time got crazy long, like 6 hours or 12 hours. This is something that kids these days, I don't think, I now sound like an old guy. Kids these days, you don't understand how fast programs ran. Well, yeah, you, when you're dealing with long turnaround time and one slight syntax error can cause you a 6 hour penalty, you get pretty good at checking things and writing tight code and making sure, you know, that's just something that's been beaten into my early DNA of programming, that you don't want to wait 12 hours for your next to find out if your program ran again or not. So it became very challenging. You know, you'd submit these cards, put them in the shoebox, and come back tomorrow to find out you had an abnormal termination on your program. Not a lot of fun. So this is a long one. I didn't want to dwell too much on Fortran, but apparently I got a little carried away. Tomorrow I'm going to tell you about the first community of interest that I had around the computer club. A lot of fun, a lot of, you know, like I said before, a lot of little hints about how I got where I am, and looking back going, oh wow, that just keeps repeating itself and echoing through history that I did this stuff. So there is fun stories in this series. There is drama in this series. There is heartbreak and sadness in this series. There's romance in this series. So stick with it. I'm going to keep going. I've got a lot more stories to tell. Like I said, I'm only up to the early 80s at this point. So until next time, 101.